shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
The Herald of Truth broadcast is on the air, a program of spirit and truth dedicated to teaching the way of God more perfectly. These broadcasts contain keys to help unlock knowledge and reveal hidden truths of the Bible in these last days. Christians, called to a higher level of understanding, will be given Bible-based solutions to their personal as well as national problems. They will want to find out more about their part in God's plan. Our mailing address is Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, and will be given again at the end of this broadcast.
Good evening. This is Brother Mike of Kingdom Identity Ministries, welcoming you to another one of our live first of the month Kingdom Concepts broadcasts. We're being heard tonight over WWCR 4.840 megahertz shortwave, WBCQ 7.415 megahertz shortwave. There are also streams from both of those stations over the internet, but you can get the clearest stream by going to our website, kingidentity.com, KINGIDENTITY.com. Go to our radio page, and near the bottom of the page, you'll see a black box that has several links, Winamp, Windows Media, Real Player, etc., and that will be your clearest stream. Tonight, we're going to have a special program that might be considered controversial. Not that all of our programs aren't considered controversial, but those of us who are called Christian patriots sometimes like to criticize the liberals for being politically incorrect or being politically correct, and we don't mind being politically incorrect. But when it comes to our own personal viewpoints, we may not want to speak about something that we oppose. But we shouldn't be defending our own personal preferences as though it were God's law, but rather putting on the mind of Christ, as the scriptures speak about, and teaching and defending his precepts. There are three lifestyles approved of in the Bible: celibacy, monogamy, and polygamy. Tonight we're going to be talking about the third one. I know that recently Warren Jeffs has been in the news. He's been prosecuted or persecuted in the court system, and I think perhaps he's done many things that are unscriptural, but what he was condemned for, to a large extent, were things that were condoned by the Bible as being correct biblical conduct. The purpose is not to defend or to condemn Mr. Jeffs or to defend any abuse of the practice of polygamy, but rather to defend the Christian faith once delivered and find out what is correct. I'm going to have two guests tonight. I'm going to ask our callers to keep your questions or comments brief and then drop off so we can maintain the best quality of our phone lines. The toll-free number to call if you wish to participate is 877-924-7722. I'll repeat that, 877-924-7722. My guests are two ladies who have participated in plural marriage. The first one is Bodica Joseph. She was the wife of a well-known polygamist, Alex Joseph, who had up to 13 wives at one time. And Anne Wild, she's a prominent defender of plural marriage who has written many books on this and other subjects. I'd like to welcome you both to the broadcast.
Thank you, Mike.
Why don't we start out on how both of you got involved in plural marriage. Anne, would you like to be the first one to comment on that?
Sure. Well, I was born and raised in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or otherwise known as Mormon Church or LDS Church. I went to BYU and graduated and married in the temple a year later, in the LDS temple. The marriage lasted for 9 years, but during that time, and that was a monogamous marriage, during that time we did a lot of research and studying about church history, how the doctrines had changed through the years, and one of them being the acceptance of plural marriage. And in 1890, the LDS Church decided they no longer wanted to live that for various reasons. But there were many people that wanted to continue that as a separate law from the LDS Church. And so I realized in my search that if it were an eternal principle at one time, then, and it was true, like it says in the Bible, then I wanted to have the opportunity to live that. So after I'd been divorced for a year, I married as a second wife into a family and was very happily married for about 33 years. My husband passed away in 2002. But I've had a very strong testimony that that was a true principle, that it could still be lived, not only for biblical reasons, but because the founder of the LDS Church, Joseph Smith, had revelations about that and restored it again, making it possible to be lived in the latter days. So I just got a testimony and was very happy in the lifestyle and felt like it was the right thing for me to do.
Of course, this has been defended by other Christian ministers through the centuries, such as Martin Luther advocated it, and we had some of the Puritans, such as Milton and others, that have advocated this as a Christian lifestyle.
Right. And even today, it's not against the law in well over 50% of the nations of the world. It doesn't mean that they necessarily live it, but at least it's not against the law like it is in the United States. And in, I live in the state of Utah, and it's a felony in the state of Utah.
Well, it seems to me as a natural lifestyle, not only among Christians and certainly the patriarchs of the past, but even the heathen practice it, and even you see something like a buck deer with a number of does and others in the animal kingdom. It is quite natural as far as I'm concerned.
I agree with you, yes.
Sister Badika, would you like to comment on how you came into plural marriage?
Well, my background is quite different from Anne's. I was baptized in the Episcopal Church and later confirmed as a member of the Presbyterian Church. When I was a, then I went on to university and I, met a, I was first introduced to plural marriage there, and like many people, my reaction was, well, who'd want to share their husband? And I'd never heard of anybody practicing plural marriage. I knew nothing of the Mormon faith, had never heard of Joseph Smith. And, but I was living in a house with five other women and, had met a man who was a polygamist who was not my husband, and I got to thinking about it, and I enjoyed the camaraderie and division of labor that we enjoyed as roommates. I thought, wow, well, this would be okay if you could have this and have a husband. So when my husband showed up, all of that kind of fell to the wayside, and the only reason I entered plural marriage was because I wanted to be his wife. However, I believe that I was drawn to him through my prayers, which were very much to, well, if I thought if there's a God, I want to do something about it. It wasn't enough for me to just go to church. I wanted to live a life that was devoted to the practice of God's will for me. And now Alex was a convert to the LDS Church and was a member for 5 years. And then when he found people living plural marriage, somewhat like Anne, he had determined that that was a correct principle and something he wanted to experience. And he was excommunicated for that and joined a fundamentalist Mormon community for a time, and then ultimately left that community to go on his own. And his thinking was that the most stable family on the planet is the Hebrew family. And the lifestyle that they practice in ancient Israel was polygamy. And that the only three men specifically mentioned as being in the kingdom of heaven were Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, all three of whom were polygamous. So that if he wanted to win God's favor, perhaps he should live the same lifestyle that they did. And it seemed to work out for him pretty well.
Well, we're also told that David was a man after God's own heart who was polygamist. And over in 2 Samuel 12:8, it tells us that I, meaning God, gave thee thy wife. So it actually shows that God himself, God is a polygamist, at least allegorically, because he had two wives. What was it, Aholah and Aholibah? The northern tribes of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah.
A lot of information has been lost over the years. You've probably heard of an ancient Jewish historian named Josephus. And he taught that Eve means the mother of all living. And it was understood then that Eve was three women, Sarah, Phoebe, and Lilith. So, you know, the Roman Catholic Church has had a great deal of control over the information that we have today, beginning with the Roman Empire. And so a lot of the truths that were known have been lost, and I agree with Anne that Joseph Smith was very instrumental in restoring those things.
Well, also, Roman law took the place of the common law or the biblical law and caused a lot of problems in a lot of areas.
Apparently, there was a shortage of women, and so they restricted the men to one wife only. And that's with the Romans, so that's kind of where the monogamy part really started.
I know that it would seem to me, I'd like both of your comments on this, that it would be more desirable for a woman to marry a quality man, I'm sure both of you greatly respected your husbands, and be a plural wife than it would be to be in a monogamous marriage and married to some jerk.
Well, that's very true. She has the opportunity, or a plural wife would have that opportunity to see what kind of a husband he is, what kind of a father he is to his children from the first wife or the first two wives, and she can get to know the family because she's not just marrying him. She is marrying his family as it exists at that time, and so it's very helpful to see how he relates to family members before she decides she wants to be in that family.
And I would add that plural marriage greatly increases a man's understanding, wisdom, intelligence, compassion, his ability to preside, and as each wife that he gains that becomes a part of him adds to that. So it certainly obeys the law of increase. And there's so many other just practical things about it. I mean, when you, Alex once said that all of the unhappiness in the world can be attributed to the inability to reconcile male and female. And while he never taught polygamy as a commandment from God that had to be lived, he did say that male and female could not be reconciled outside of plural marriage. And if you just look at the nature of men and women, it would appear from reading the news every day that men seem to be polygamous by nature, given the affairs and all of that. And you know, it's a given tragedy that so many men get to a certain age and dump their wife for some younger, prettier woman. And, you know, with plural marriage, that is all avoided because a man's sexual nature is much more compatible with more than having more than one wife. And for a woman, what's the common joke out there that, oh, sorry, honey, I have a headache. And, you know, Alex, in our family, we arranged our sexual life by appointment. You know, we all wanted to have children, and he said, you know when the best time is, and I don't want my sexual nature to oppress any one of you, so if you want to share my bed, make an appointment. And that worked out great for us.
You wouldn't say that plural marriage was solely based on sex like the critics say, you know, that it's just a man and lust. Just like monogamous marriage, it can be based on many qualities.
Well, that's true, but let me say this about my belief about all of God's laws, is that they are intended for our ultimate joy and happiness, and also for the survival of families. You know, if you want to provide a stable environment for children to grow up in, and if you have parents divorcing and husbands running off with other women, I mean, that is destabilizing for the children. And so I think there's a very practical application. It's not something mystical. It's a real on-the-ground demonstration.
Well, I saw an interview that Alex mentioned that he married the perfect woman, and I believe at that time it was 9 wives. And it would seem to me that, as you said earlier, you could have maybe an older wife and a younger wife and one who has certain qualities, say domestic qualities or technical abilities or what have you. And perhaps that wife would be rejected as a spouse if it was her and her alone, but all together you complete the whole and come up with an ideal marriage that doesn't turn women out in the street or reject them or, you know, divorces and some of the things that are going on today.
And just like another advantage, too, is if a woman cannot have children, for example, I could only have one and then adopted two in my first marriage, but then she can enjoy the children that the other wives have and bring to the family. I've often said that plural marriage can give a woman the best of both worlds. She can be a mother, either of her own children or children, other children in the family. She can go back to school and complete a college degree if she hasn't already done so and would like to. She can help bring in family income by getting a job and getting out of the home a little bit and still have other sister wives that would be there to provide the mothering role to the rest of the children.
And of course, everybody has some bad days or some sickness or something like that. And when that happens, I guess one of the sister wives could step in and take care of whatever activity was needed at that time.
Sure. You have more adults to help with the children.
Well, and another benefit that I found with it is, no offense to the warm, sensitive men out there, but I don't think that as a general rule, men are equipped to provide all of the emotional support that a woman needs. And because they're busy, they're out working, conquering territories, and it was so nice to have the camaraderie, the companionship of other women to, just for emotional support.
Well, I know women tend to share things with each other that kind of shocking to men. You know, we don't share among other men, and there is a personal relationship, I think, is part of the woman's nature with other women.
Right. I agree with that. And then if there's three wives, for example, and he decides he's going to take out wife number three for dinner and a movie one night, will the other two wives have the companionship, whether they want to stay home with the children or maybe the two of them will want to go out? So if there's at least three wives, you have the opportunity of at least being with one other adult while the husband goes out with one of the other wives.
I'm assuming, of course, from your conversations, both of you, you didn't feel oppressed in any way. A lot of the world condemns polygamy or plural marriage as oppressive to women.
Well, it's usually because there's some jealousy factor, and a lot of the plural wives do experience that. I'm kind of an independent person anyway, and I don't really need to have a husband around 24/7. So it's nice for me to have time to do my own thing with my children or with projects that I'm working on. And then when he was home before he died, then naturally he was the priority for my time and attention, and we had a great relationship.
You know, and I would say it's the tendency of people to stereotype. I just did it when I said men, you know, can't fulfill the emotional needs of a woman. But, people tend to throw all polygamists into the same category, and there's no more similarity from one polygamous family to another than there is from one monogamous family to another. You know, that some monogamous family, there's terrible domestic violence, and then others enjoy incredible bliss. So there's many, many different demonstrations amongst polygamous, and I frankly attribute most of the success or failure to the skill of a husband being a good patriarch in his family and having enough wisdom to keep his wives from feeling insecure, because jealousy, I think, is a more male attribute, born out of possessiveness, territorialism. I think that the challenging part for a woman in plural marriage is insecurity. And in Alex's family, a wife who was being helpful and nice, pleasant to be around, useful, enjoyed more favor than one who was not behaving in that way. So you learned that if you wanted to have a nice relationship with Alex, it was in your best interest to be a pleasant, productive person. And so it had the effect of encouraging the best attributes, which I appreciated. It was challenging. You know, you couldn't afford to get lazy because you got about, you know, being a good, valuable, productive person, or you quickly became insecure and very unhappy.
And I agree with
Felicia. It's actually a growth, spiritual growth factor involved there.
Absolutely.
You know, you're overcoming whatever the disagreeable point may be, such as jealousy or nagging or other things. She would grow in her emotions spiritually by having other sister wives who would tend to have more favor for being sweeter and having better companionship with the husband.
That's correct.
And I agree with Bodhika when she said that there's a variety of ways of living this lifestyle. You might find some of the wives prefer to live in the same home, or maybe they get along better if they're in separate homes. My husband used to say, give them plenty of space. They're like turkeys, and if you enclose them in too tight of an area, then they're going to start pecking on each other. So they need to have, at least in my experience, they need to have a little bit of private space or a little bit of space when they're with him or otherwise. And I've just really appreciated the fact that a lot of people, there's no recipe book. And so just like there's many different ways of living monogamy, there's also many different ways of formulating a family and a plural lifestyle.
Now, as far as taking wives, I know that it's been reported that the FLDS group, the girl felt that she came to a marriageable age, is what I was told, and that she approached her father to be put on, I believe it was called a celestial marriage list. And then the father, perhaps in conjunction with the advice of whoever the leader was, would do an arranged marriage. I think maybe it's been abused and they were forced into it at times instead of consenting. But in your group, Anne, how do the young ladies come into a marriage? What's the typical manner?
Well, this is probably a good time to explain a little bit about the different groups. I'm not a member of any particular polygamous groups. I'm what's called an independent fundamentalist Mormon. The umbrella term in describing fundamentalist Mormons, that's the term, is fundamentalist Mormon. Now, within that term, there are different groups, and Warren Jeffs is the leader of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ, or FLDS, and that group has about 10,000 people. The next largest group of the fundamentalist Mormons is what's called the Apostolic United Brethren, or AUB, and they have about 7,500. And then there's a couple of groups that have about 2,000 apiece, and then there's some smaller groups. And each one of these groups really handles how to enter a plural marriage a little bit differently. Warren Jeffs, I think, was stronger in appointing and arranging marriages than any of the other communities. In the All Red group, what usually happens is that a young couple will decide they would like to get married. They would go to the leader of the group. Naturally, they get their parents' approval and so forth. Then they would go to the leader of the group and ask for his blessing and his approval. Now, if it's a plural marriage, courtship is not really a big thing in most of these groups. But you can be invited, like for Sunday dinner. If you're a prospective plural wife, you could go over and you kind of don't have a one-on-one date necessarily with the husband, but you go over and get to know the whole family. And then naturally there's going to be time for them just to get together alone and make sure that this is going to be a chemical good reaction, you know, in that situation. So, and then the independents just do a courtship just like anybody else. And then if it works, they have the testimony of somebody who holds the priesthood sealing keys, and they go to that person and ask him to seal that marriage.
Do the marriages primarily take place within the groups, or are there both men and women that come in from the outside, not necessarily joining the group, but are the ladies married to, occasionally to men on the outside, or are the men from the outside?
Very rarely. The groups, especially FLDS, is very strong in marrying people from among their own community, and they all encourage that. It makes for a better foundation. Now, independence is a little different. Yeah, the parents like to have their young people marry somebody with the same basic religious beliefs, but that's not always the case, because a lot of independents will go to public school, they'll meet other teenagers and young people. And we did a survey not too long ago when we wrote a book called Voices in Harmony, and out of the some of the questions we asked was, how many of your marriage-age children have stayed with the lifestyle, polygamous lifestyle? And there were only about a third to a fourth of the ones that maintain that life structure.
Wouldn't there be some worrying about maybe inbreeding by keeping too much within the group?
Well, some of these groups, like I say, have thousands of people, but there are problems that way. And in a couple of the groups especially, there have been cases of incest. Hopefully that is diminishing, and they're realizing that that's not the proper way for a marriage. It's interesting, in Utah, marrying first cousins is against the law. But in about half of the states of the United States, marrying first cousins is not against the law. So first of all, you have to define incest according to which state you're in. And then we formed a advocacy group called Principal Voices. And the women that are included in that have strongly recommended to the various leaders that they do not have incestuous marriages, nor do they marry under the legal age, which in the state of Utah is 18. Now, it's 16 with parental consent for a monogamous marriage, and we had to explain to the different communities that that is not appropriate for a polygamous marriage. In fact, if the parents give permission for a 16-year-old daughter to marry as a plural wife, that's being guilty of statutory rape, so, or accomplice to it. So we've had to kind of explain some of the laws to our people so that they would understand them better and try and uphold the laws wherever possible, with the exception, of course, of plural marriage.
Of course, under God's law, the marriage age was much younger, above puberty, but...
Right, even in the early days of the LDS Church, which it was organized in 1830, but Joseph Smith himself took girls that were under what we now term as the legal age. So in biblical times and in early church history times, girls got married at a younger age.
Of course, they were more mature than most girls are today, too, which
I agree.
Even in our area, we have a lot of Mennonites, and they tend to be more mature. They have responsibilities at an early age.
Right.
But again, I can understand, as a practical matter, keeping within man's laws, because there's so many problems now, and most of the spokespeople, when it comes to the TV and radio and so on, are against plural marriage, and a lot of disgruntled wives that have been in, and I think in most cases they tend to be rebellious in their attitude, by my observation.
Well, unfortunately, that was the only voice that was being heard by media and our Attorney General's office in Utah, is women that it did not work for, and they became very bitter and left the lifestyle and the community and had these terrible tales of abuse or submission and things like that. That's one of the reasons why two or three other ladies and myself decided somehow a positive voice needs to be heard. and rather than just all the negative ones. And so we wrote this book and collected testimonies and experiences from about 100 women that had lived plural marriage and that were very happy in it. It had worked for them. But those voices were not heard up until then because of the risk involved in being possibly prosecuted or persecuted or both because of that lifestyle. So in putting out our book and in becoming advocates for the lifestyle, we have tried to educate people that if you can get beyond the yuck factor of it, and if it's between consenting adults, we ought to have the right as consenting adults to choose whatever alternative lifestyle we want to choose. Not too long ago, there was a survey taken, and it said that there were more alternative families in the United States than there were monogamous, just regular mother, dad, and two or three kids. I mean, you've got single parents, you've got grandparents raising their kids, you've got gay couple raising kids, all kinds of configurations now to make up a family, and that's all we're saying is that we would like to see polygamy decriminalized so that we can form our families between consenting adults in the way that we so choose.
Of course, it's sad to see polygamy lumped with homosexual marriages, which are definitely unscriptural.
Right, and the way we explain that is that they are entitled to their equal civil rights the same way that we would like to have equal civil rights. However, when it comes to religious understanding of it, I agree with you. The Bible and other places do not recommend that as a viable lifestyle.
Bodica, Alex was rather high profile in his interviews and so on, and you had other ladies with him, the wives. Was there any persecution of your family by the state?
No, I'm amazed by that because men like Tom Green he spent time in prison, but and I can't explain why that was, except we never took welfare. We filed separate tax forms as a household because we didn't have any other alternative. But we had jobs. We were stable. We incorporated a town. Alex was the mayor. His wife Elizabeth was the town prosecutor. And we had an open door policy. So anybody that wanted to come and see what we were doing was welcome to come. And that's one of the reasons Alex always did. He didn't seek publicity, but if asked, he would open his door to it because he felt that that was a protection. Because people fear what they don't know, and left to their imaginations, they're probably going to conjure up some scene of orgy or something. And when the press came, they saw these children that were happy and healthy and wives that were happy and healthy, and, you know, it was kind of hard to argue with the success of it.
Of course, you wouldn't have taken a state marriage license.
No, we didn't. Had we ever been prosecuted, we would have defended it on the right to form contracts, much like Anne is saying, that we wouldn't have done it as a freedom of religion. We would have done it as a right to form contracts between consenting adults. And we did have written contracts for our marriages.
I was just going to explain a little bit about Bodica when she said that they were not really prosecuted. I think one of the reasons possibly is that during that time period, the state of Utah was not really going after polygamists because of the 1953 raid down in Colorado City. Because of the way that turned out, and I don't want to go into a lot of detail, but they came in early in the morning and arrested the men and they took the women and children and sent them off to 200 miles away, and it was a very bad decision because public opinion was against the government officials for separating families. And so for about 50 years, the government didn't really want to do anything and cause more problems, So they just kind of left polygamists alone for quite a while. And then when our attorney general now came into office, he started hearing some of these reports of women that came out and hearing reports of abuse and so forth, and he felt like he really had to do something. And so it's just been in the last few years where they have really tried to check into abuse cases and incest cases and do something about them.
I imagine previously they went under God's law. It was approved, maybe solemnized by the church. That is the tradition until relatively recent times. We have a tract, and if anybody listening to the broadcast would like it, I'll send you a free copy, called The Marriage License Issued by God or the State. We oppose the state involving their hands in a marriage, even a monogamous marriage, because it's between the man, the woman, and God is the third party to the contract, not the state making it a corporate entity which controls the children. I see we have a caller on line 3, Alan from Michigan. Welcome to the broadcast.
Hello. I was wondering, would you say that Abraham committed incest when he took Sarah for his wife? She was wasn't she the half-sister?
I believe that it says that in the King James, but I don't believe it says it in the Hebrew. It's been a while since I've looked into it. Certainly, he was a man approved of by God. We're told that in the kingdom that we'll see Abraham, and certainly he had plural marriage. Do either of you ladies have a comment on that?
Well, there would have to be something like that. Of course, when he was trying to save his wife's life and he said, well, yes, she's my sister, that was just for expedience purposes. But when you go back to Adam and Eve, there's going to have to have been some type of incest for people to continue on with the human race. Brother is going to have to marry a sister or something right at the beginning there. So there have been occasions where that has been okay.
Like I said, it's been a long time since I've looked into that question, but as I recall, that the Hebrew actually indicated that she was something like a cousin.
Well, it just says that, like, I think you said, well, we have the same mother or same one parent was one thing. How to say it? We have the same father but different mothers or something like that. Which indicates that they were very, very closely related.
Well, I think a normal man wouldn't have a desire for too close of a relationship. I know that even though I love my sisters, I certainly wouldn't be interested in marriage or sexual relationship, and I think that's probably the feeling of any normal person.
I have one other question. He gets with Hagar, and I thought that Abraham concerned about racial purity, why would he have anything to do with Hagar, produce a child by Hagar, who was an Egyptian?
Well, she was an Adamite. The Egyptians were, at that time, white or Adamic, not like the Egyptians of today, which are Dwarthy and who married into some of the darker races later. So you remember that Joseph, they couldn't distinguish Joseph from any of the other Egyptians when the brothers went down to Egypt. So while she wasn't the chosen seed line, she was still Adamic.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you for your call, Alan. And if anybody else would like to participate in the broadcast tonight, the toll-free number is 877-924-7722. I'll repeat that again, 877-924-7722. We'd like to have some of you ladies call, either from a monogamous or polygamous marriages, and would comment on your feelings on this subject tonight. I think, again, the subject's coming up. It's solely viewed as a sexual type thing, which, of course, that's a legitimate desire, biblically. But there are other qualities in the plural marriage, as we mentioned.
Well, as a fundamentalist Mormon, we, and I'm speaking in generalities, but we live it for religious reasons, with the idea that if we live it righteously, that we will achieve a better resurrection and our families will be sealed for eternity. So, but we believe that having more than one wife in harmony is necessary to achieve the highest degree that's available for men and women to achieve.
I know prophecy says that seven women shall cling to one man in the latter days.
Right.
In Isaiah 4:1. Mm-hmm. And if you'll read Isaiah 3, you'll see that it's a breakdown of society. And then you read Isaiah 4:2 and on, and you'll see that it's concerning a restoration of the kingdom. So I would think that the seven women clinging to one man, or in other words, plural marriage, was actually part of the restoration of the kingdom. I see we have a caller on line 4, Buddy from Tennessee. Welcome to the broadcast.
Hey.
Hi, Buddy.
I just wanted to comment on your last caller's question. The Hebrew word there for sister is ahbath, and it simply means together. Now, it was translated sometimes in the King James Version, sister, but it was also translated together. So, when Abraham was telling them, hey, we're together, so that was the literal Hebrew.
Thank you for bringing that out.
Okay.
Do you have any other comments?
I've enjoyed y'all's discussion. The whole problem boils down to scripturally basing a relationship. And we know that the scriptures do teach that a man can't have more than one wife. I mean, that's demonstrated with David and Abraham and Solomon and all the way through the scriptures. The big problem we have today is nobody sets up anything by the scriptures. They're completely ignorant of the scriptures. So the relationship between the man and the woman is not scriptural based. And in order to have one that is, people are going to have to know something about what God's word says and conduct themselves accordingly. So there's a whole weakness in what's going on throughout society today. But as far as having a legitimacy under the present law of the land, the thing they're doing with the homosexuals opens up the door kind of relationship. So I think this have opened the Pandora's box. But at the same time, as far as a man having more than one wife, it's scriptural. But at the same time, if somebody's wanting to fight, they could be successful in this if they had to litigate. So, yeah, it's scriptural. There's no problem in the Bible with any of this. It's just that the relationships that are launched out upon aren't based upon scripture. There's too much ignorance as far as the word of God and what God expects the relationship to be. But I'll get off, Mike, and y'all have a good broadcast. Y'all be blessed.
You too, buddy. Thank you for that call. If anybody else would like to participate tonight, the number is 877-924-7722. That's a toll-free number. 877-924-7722. It seems like we have to fight for everything that's scriptural, not just plural marriage, because the state is quite often an enemy of things that are of God. And a lot of people don't know the scripture, or if they do, sometimes it's just a surface message, maybe the King James translation, and they don't go into the Hebrew and Greek, and I appreciate Buddy bringing that out there. But one verse that I'd like to bring up is Hebrews 13:4, where it says, marriage is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled. The word all there, if you look it up in your Strong's Concordance, says in all forms. And that would include plural marriage. Of course, it's all godly forms of marriage, but marriage is honorable in all, and the bed's undefiled by taking more than one wife. Would either of you like to comment on that or anything else?
Well, along with the examples we've used with Abraham and David and Solomon and so forth, a lot of the fundamentalist Mormons believe that Jesus himself had more than one wife. In fact, if you go back and study the traditions at the time for marriage, when Jesus was married, we refer to that as the marriage of Cana. They went to the bridegroom for when they ran out of wine. Well, that was his, traditionally, that was his job as the bridegroom, to provide wine at the weddings. So if he were a guest, they wouldn't have gone to him and asked for the wine. Then there's other things that have come out even in recent years, where scholars have come out with the idea that in order to be a rabbi, you had to be married. Margaret Starbird has written a book about Mary Magdalene, and believes very strongly that she was a wife of Jesus Christ. So even in the New Testament, there is evidence that plural marriage is not condemned.
Now, I know that our canonical scripture generally leaves it where you can't prove one way or another whether Jesus was married. Although, and I don't have a problem with that concept, some people use historical literature that may or may not be correct, but I do have a problem with Mary Magdalene, because Christ as God in the flesh doesn't violate his own laws. For instance, he didn't come into the priesthood until he was 30, because he couldn't become a priest until he was 30. That's part of the biblical canon of law. But one of the laws is that a priest, and he is our high priest, doesn't marry anybody but another priest's widow or a virgin. And by tradition, Mary Magdalene was not a virgin. Some people say she was a whore. And,
well, yeah, I don't go that far. And there have been scholarly reports that she was of royal lineage. So I think we're at the mercy of the translators of the Old and New Testament, because if they didn't want to put in there that from the records that they were translating that Jesus was married, they just left it out. And I think there's many places in scriptures that they just omitted things that would be nice if we had that information today.
Well, and I'd like to add something else, since your audience is this is about the royal lineage, and that is, well, for one thing, there were many things that were left out of the Bible at the Council of Nicaea. That was agreement that was made, and let's not forget that that the Roman Catholic Church designated a pope as the head, who had no claim to any birthright lineage, a usurper, if you will. I would say Queen Elizabeth perhaps has a better claim.
Well, certainly. Scripture tells us to study to show ourselves approved, and there's a lot of that has been hidden from us and through approval. I might, since you brought it up, I might mention that plural marriage can be used to increase the race. The white race is deteriorating. We're losing population, whereas the non-white races, the Hispanics and the Asiatics and the blacks and so on, are greatly increasing. And if we do want to preserve our race, then I think that this has been one of the blessings that the Mormon people, it happened to them when they moved to Utah many years ago under the early leaders of that church.
That's correct.
And it's
I want to make one. I'm sorry. I just have to say one thing, okay? Because I want to stand in defense of Mary Magdalene. Part of my point in saying what I said is that I believe that there is no greater enemy to the lineage of Jesus Christ, and if indeed, then those who might have wanted to obliterate it for their own ends by appointing a usurper in place of a lawful king. And don't you think it would be in their interest to malign a wife of Jesus, a woman of royal lineage, and call her a prostitute, or infer that through their translations when it's not at all the truth? So,
exactly.
I just want to stand in defense of Mary Magdalene.
Yeah, well,
good,
from,
I agree.
From my standpoint, you know, I can't defend it one way or the other, because I just don't know. But I will say that it's not a topic I really want to bring up tonight, but there is another form of what the Ferrier Fenton translation of the Bible calls a secondary wife, and that's a concubine. And you remember that Bilhah and Zilpha were concubines and later advanced to full wives. And that
Mary Magdalene was no concubine. Mary Magdalene was a queen in her own right by royal lineage and by marriage.
I see that our time's slipping and we got two callers on the line, so let's first take Les from Utah, who's been holding the longest. Welcome to the broadcast, Les. I hear some feedback from my previous comments.
You remember this?
Apparently we had a connection problem. Let's take Tim from Maryland and maybe we can get back to Les. Tim, you're on the air.
Greetings. Yeah, I wanted to make a comment. Like I said, a lot of people that, like a buddy from Tennessee was making a comment. A lot of people are very ignorant of the scriptures. They have gone on hearsay and just total, I mean, what people have told them. Nobody ever studies. Nobody ever reads the scriptures. They don't even go into depth to it, and they just try to tell you what is on it. And if you look at the book of Revelation, everything in that book of Revelation has fulfilled itself, except for maybe one or two pages. And when it talks about our people coming out of the system, it's talking about our brains coming out of it. And for the last 3 years, I have been, studying this commercial system, and I have gotten myself out of it. And I know how to operate within that system. And I've had polygamy on my mind for a long, long time. It's not just something new that has been introduced to me. It's been, how you get a thought in your head and you know that's how you're being led and it just stays with you. And I made a comment to somebody today. I said, if white people got together and had four wives, I said they could produce 20 children within a 4 or 5 year period. And now that's the reason why they have brought this homosexuality into it, because that diminishes the population down even more. And that's total confusion.
It's true.
It's probably because of polygamy that Moses led 4.5 million Hebrews out of Egypt.
Yeah, that's
correct.
Established, in a book we publish called The Biblical Case for Polygamy by Pastor Stivers. We ask an $8 contribution on that, and it does go into the biblical comments. We only have a couple
and
minutes
left. And I wanted
left,
to make a comment
like
also
to thank,
because like
Tim for his call, and let's try Les again. Les, he dropped off the line. I'd like to thank both of you ladies for being on tonight. I really appreciate it. Do you have any final comments that you'd like to make?
Well, it's interesting. It's kind of ironic that when we talk about polygamy, I probably the most common practice in the Catholic Church. Look at all the nuns that are married to Christ. I mean, that's a big, big family. And it's an excellent case of polygamy. Maybe it isn't existing here in mortality, but apparently they think they'll be married to him in the hereafter. One other thing, I do want to make sure that people understand that in fundamentalist situations, we do live this lifestyle for religious reasons, not for sex or custom or anything else. It's definitely a religious belief with us.
Well, thank you. And Bodhika, do you have any last comment?
Just that I consider my marriage to Alex the greatest blessing of my life, and that I still feel deeply devoted to his wives and to his children. And it is my fondest hope that we will all be together in the hereafter.
Well, once again, I thank you both for being part of the broadcast tonight. And Anne, I believe you have a book. Would you like to? We only have 20 seconds left. Would you like to comment how to contact you?
They can just contact me on my email. It's annebwild@comcast.net. That's A-N-N-E, initial B as in boy, wild, W-I-L-D-E, @comcast.net. The name of the book is Voices in Harmony, Contemporary Women Celebrate Plural Marriage. And it's, I think, excellent because it talks about how it works for people today.
We pray that your spiritual ears have received today's message and that you were fed with strong meat relevant to solving the needs of our nation and Christian civilization everywhere.
Herald of Truth is sponsored by Kingdom Identity Ministries through the financial support and prayers of listeners like you who love the truth of God's Word and want to see it broadcast throughout the land to awaken His people. If you would like a
CD
of today's message, tell us the date and station to which you are listening and send a donation to cover our cost plus help with radio time to Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602. We would appreciate donations made by our international listeners to be in U.S. funds. For a free introductory packet of information, including our doctrinal statement of beliefs, plus lists of books and tapes to aid you in your study of biblical truth, write Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, USA. Or request this material by calling 870-741-1119. That's 870-741-1119. Visit our internet website by going to www.kingidentity.com. Type www.kingidentity.com. We invite you to listen regularly to Herald of Truth broadcast for more dynamic messages proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom at this same time and station.